Hi, this is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to episode number 23 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, the podcast designed to help smart businesses with an interest in innovation and the Internet of Things become even more innovative. In this episode today, my guest is John Warrilow, author of the books Built to Sell and The Automatic Customer, and founder of the Value Builder System, a statistically proven methodology for increasing the value of your company. John talks to me about recurring revenue or subscription business models and how they can give any business certainty in terms of cash flow, in terms of inventory, and in terms of staff management. This is another fascinating episode. I love John's book, The Automatic Customer, and speaking to him today gave me so many additional insights and ideas. I hope that you'll have the same experience as well, so stay tuned. This podcast is sponsored by InnovaBiz, where we help smart, innovative business owners save time and money and grow their business by making their websites achieve more. Of course, at InnovaBiz, we do more than just build websites. We provide solutions to our clients' needs by leveraging the power of the internet in innovative ways. If you want to learn more, then go to our website at innovabiz.com.au or contact me directly through the contact information there. Before we meet John, a quick competition announcement. This week, I'm giving away a copy of John's book, The Automatic Customer, which we talk about quite a lot on the interview. So stick around for details on how you can enter the draw to win that competition prize later on in the interview. Now, let's get into the innovation hive and get the buzz from John Warrilow.
This is the InnovaBuzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to have with me here today on the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from Toronto in Canada, John Warrilow. John's the creator and founder and president of the Value Builder System, a company that helps business owners improve the value of their company. And he's also authored two really good books, Built to Sell and The Automatic Customer. So welcome to the podcast, John. It's a real privilege to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Jürgen.
Now, of course, I should also mention that John has his own podcast called Built to Sell Radio, so I encourage our audience to go and check that out as well after you've listened to this interview, of course. Now, before we learn more about John and all the things he's up to, a quick competition announcement. So I'm giving away a copy of John's book, The Automatic Customer. So in that book, and we'll talk a lot more about that in the interview, he talks about nine business models that are good recurring revenue business models, and he talks about all the things that you need to have in place, where those business models are well suited, and so on. So we'll learn more about that as we talk with John today, but stay tuned later on in the interview where you can learn how you can go in the prize to win a copy of John's book. So John, before we talk about all things subscription-based business models and automatic customers, tell us a little bit about you. When you were a child, did you have the entrepreneurial bug, or did you have other aspirations?
They used to call me Johnny the Juice Man because I got out of class in grade 8 early to go set up in the cafeteria and sell juice to all the kids in grade 7 and 8. And in North America, grade 7 and 8 is about age 12 and 13 years old. So that nickname, by the way, has stuck with me ever since. And okay. Even my friends today call me that. So yeah, I mean, I've always been interested in entrepreneurship. I had lots of different businesses growing up as a kid, some total disasters, others that sort of got a bit of traction. But yeah, I've always been interested in entrepreneurship for sure.
Okay, that's great. Now, I noted in my research that you started and exited four companies, and one of those was actually acquired by a New York Stock Exchange listed company, the Corporate Executive Board. So obviously, you know, you've done really well there, and I guess that was the basis of the built-to-sell model that you're involved in now.
It's really a mashup of the four companies. I had a graphic design studio, and the protagonist in the book is a graphic design studio owner. I had a market research business, an events company. So, you know, the Built to Sell was really an amalgam of you know, four different companies, lots of life lessons, and lots of mistakes made, a couple successes, and tried to kind of formulate those into a model business owners can follow to transform a very owner-dependent business into one that would be a sellable asset. So that's the nature of that book.
Okay, yeah. And in terms of your business today, so what do you focus on there?
We help entrepreneurs improve the value of their company. We've developed a 12-step process. We take business owners through to drive up the value of their company. On average, businesses improve their value by 71% going through the 12 steps we take them through. So that's valuebuildersystem.com.
Mm, yeah, that's pretty amazing, really, getting the value up by 71%. So so what do you do day-to-day in that business?
Personally, these days, I do a lot of the kind of front-end promotional stuff. So I do a lot of speaking, writing, do my podcast, Built to Sell Radio, lots of sort of the kind of front-end piece. The day-to-day operations of the business are run by some of my members of my team. We've got someone who heads up our advisory services practice, someone who heads up our customer experience, a technology lead. So we've got people in place that sort of lead the day-to-day, but I'm sort of on the kind of most public, I guess, person on the front end of the business doing some of the PR stuff.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. Yeah. And I'm guessing that this is a subscription based model. And we can talk a little bit more about that. But it's interesting because having that recurring revenue and having the systems and everything in place allows you to focus on the things you've just talked about, which probably is where you add the most value to that business.
Yeah, or I screwed up the least. Yeah, no, exactly. I try to stay out of the operations and again stay on the front end. But you're right. It's a subscription business. So basically, the way the Value Builder system works is we work with entrepreneurs who pay us typically on a monthly basis to be coached through the process of improving the value of their business. And so that's a recurring fee that we charge business owners to go through the process. So, yeah, it's a subscription business for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a good segue. Can you talk a little bit more about the subscription-based models that you describe in the automatic customer, and particularly, you know, what are the benefits for a business to go to a subscription-based business?
Well, the biggest benefit is that it improves the value of your company. You know, when we Built to Sell was my first book. After Built to Sell, I started the Value Builder system, and it's got these eight key drivers of value. One of the eight is recurring revenue, and I realized that upon reflection, I didn't spend enough time in Built to Sell digging in on recurring revenue. And so I wanted to right that wrong and write this book, The Automatic Customer, to really focus in on this one driver of your company's value, which is how much recurring or annuity-based revenue you've got coming in every month. I mean, because an acquirer is going to look at your business and they're going to say, great, you're the entrepreneur, you know, you're the rainmaker. When you leave, what happens to the sales? Mm-hmm. And M&A guys, you know, refer to it as the continuity of the revenue. Like, is it sustainable revenue? I call it recurring revenue. But basically, anyone looking to buy a business is going to ask themselves, you know, how sustainable is the revenue? And that's where recurring revenue really makes a big difference to the value of your company.
Yeah, well, that's a big one, isn't it? Now, it's a little bit intangible, I guess, when you're stuck in the day-to-day operations of a business.
Yeah, well, you know, so many of us think of our profit and loss statement as our report card, right? So the P&L is what has, you know, from business school 101 or high school economics, you learn the P&L is your report card. In actual fact, in a recurring revenue business model, it's much more nuanced. It's much more complex because, you know, what's a statement that actually I think is really a more reflection of the benefit or the value the entrepreneur is adding is actually the valuation statement. Like, how much is this entrepreneur improving the value of the company? I was talking to a guy this morning who has a business that's generating $3 million in revenue. And, you know, they probably put 10 or 20 points on the bottom line. So call it $300,000 to $600,000 of profit. A good business. But they just raised money. They just raised $1.5 million. They sold 25% of the business. So at roughly a $6 million valuation. So my question of the entrepreneur is, you know, are you happy with the value you've added to your business this year? Not the profit that, that you've been able to glean, but more importantly, what, you know, how much is your business worth? Because I think that's the ultimate acid test for any entrepreneur.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really good point. And also it having the systems in place that can sustain that ongoing revenue model means that presumably, well, maybe in parallel to that, that the business owner or the founder of the business is actually redundant.
That's absolutely right. It's again, it's critical. If you think about building a valuable company, if you could distill it down to a single idea, it's obviously a very complicated, you know, concept, very complicated idea. But if you could distill it down to its raw material, it's really, does your business operate without you?
Yeah.
If the answer to that question is yes, then you've got a very valuable company. If the answer is no, then you got work to do to get the best value for your business.
Yeah. Okay. So tell us a little bit about the different models that you talk about in the automatic customer for subscription based businesses.
Yeah, sure. There's 9 different models. And, you know, if we had a 3-hour time slot, I could go through each of the 9 for you, but I won't bore you with that. I think if your listeners want to download an ebook we created that summarizes the 9 models and who they work best for, they can just go to automaticcustomer.com and download the ebook. It's free, doesn't cost anything, and then you'll get basically the 9 models, who they work best for, and some suggestions from the pros on how to implement. But basically, the thesis is, and the kind of the core idea of the book is that no matter what industry you are in, you can create some recurring revenue. I'll give you an example. You know, the business of selling flowers in a traditional way is not something that you can, is not a great business. You know, you've got to have expensive retail space in a high traffic mall or an office tower. So it costs a fortune for space. In Sydney, you might spend, $150 a square foot just for the space. You then have to buy the inventory, which, oh, by the way, rots. And after 6 weeks, excuse me, it's all dead in your refrigerator. Typical flower store in America will throw out 50% of its inventory. I hasten to take a guess that it's probably similar in Australia. And so it's a tough business model, and people only buy once in a while, right? Like maybe Valentine's Day, maybe Mother's Day. So contrast the typical flower store in a business that virtually nobody thinks about recurring revenue, and take a look at the company H. Bloom. They're a flower company. They sell flowers, and that's where the parallels with a traditional flower store end. What H. Bloom does is sell flowers on subscription. So they go to hotels, spas, restaurants, and they say, look, we can provide you with flowers every 2 weeks because, you know what, you're too busy to replenish the flowers. You don't want them rotting on the reception table. So we'll come replenish them. We'll send you a business grade invoice, and we'll do that every 2 weeks. Well, the typical average lifetime value of an H. Bloom subscriber, you sell them once, and the typical subscriber stays to the tune of more than $4,000. Contrast that with the typical flower store where the average sale might be $29-$30.
Yeah.
So, you know, in any industry, I don't care if you're a lawyer, you're a manufacturing company, you're a high street retailer, you can create recurring revenue.
Yeah, that's a good, really good story. And there's a lot of other benefits there that are very clear. So, you know, the business has clear and able to plan for a clear cash flow. They have they can plan for the raw material that they need, in this case, flowers. They can... they don't have this situation where they've got a lot of waste. And like you say, they've got this $4,000 lifetime customer compared to, say, 30.
You got it. And, I mean, a lot of people listening may say, well, that's great if you're a flower store, but I don't have inventory. But your people are your inventory. If you hire people and you employ people, they come in on a Monday, they leave on a Friday, they expect to get paid. And that is your perishable inventory. And if you don't have enough work for them, It can be very unprofitable. If you have too many people and not enough work, it's very unprofitable. If you have too much work, not enough people, everybody gets stressed out, culture sucks, and they leave. And so finding the balance between having enough and too many people is really difficult if you sell on a transactional model. But if you sell on subscription, you know how many customers you have in 3-6 months from now, so you can staff accordingly.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really good angle to look at that. People as a perishable inventory. I like that. And like you say, making sure that they've got work to do and that the business is actually creating revenue so that you can pay them on an ongoing basis without going broke. And at the same time, plan the work out so that you're not stretching the resources to the breaking point is another great benefit.
Exactly.
So what are some of the keys then to running a successful recurring revenue model?
Well, you've got to lower your churn. I mean, or watch your churn like a hawk. I mean, the recurring revenue business, by its nature, the number one metric that you've got to sort of monitor is the percentage of people who quit subscribing each month. That's referred to among industry parlance is a churn or cancellation rate. And so that's really the secret sauce. You know, if you've got 20 subscribers and 10% of your subscribers churn 1 month, that's only two people. And so it's relatively easy to go out and win two new customers. I mean, friends and family, you know, connections of connections, you could probably find two new subscribers. But if you've got 2,000 subscribers and 10% quit, that's 200 people that you've got to go out and find just to fill the leaky bucket. So as your company grows, churn becomes bigger and bigger and bigger issue. It becomes a bigger and bigger issue. So again, very early stage, churn, it's no big deal, right? But as you grow and start to scale, it's the thing that really stops people from scaling up subscription businesses. You know, I call it the treadmill to nowhere, because you get into this point where you're just basically replacing the subscribers you lose every month. So really, it's about lowering churn.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very key point. And I guess one of the primary ways that you do that is ensuring that the value of the service or product that you're offering is very high and remains very high, so that it's not just about revenue coming in on a recurring basis, it's the value you're providing to the customer that's recurring as well.
Value is important, but we all have probably quit subscription businesses that offer tremendous value, but for whatever reason, we're not using that value. Mm. Offering a great product or service is important, but getting people to actually adopt it and use it is arguably more important. And so that's really where onboarding comes in. What you'll find if you run a subscription business is the first 90 days, first 60 to 90 days is the onboarding window. That's the window where you can actually get customers to change their behavior, to adopt whatever it is that you sell. But as soon as customers crest that 90-day window and they start to get into, you know, 4, 5, 6 months from subscribing, the chances that you're going to change their behavior starts dropping off a cliff. So what you've got to really do is have a full court press, to use an American basketball analogy. I'm not sure what the Aussie rules football analogy would be, but use a full court press to get them to adopt, to get them to change behavior in the first 90 days. That's the real secret sauce.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think, you know, I was thinking as you spoke there about gym membership. I mean, how many people have gone into a gym membership, which is kind of a subscription thing because you pay for a year up front and then they might go along for the first 2 or 3 weeks and then all of a sudden they go revert back to their old behavior of, you know, what it, not an exercise regime where they actually use that gym membership. In fact, a guy I know was telling me recently, and they've got an ongoing subscription, so automatic renewal. They've actually been calling a bunch of clients that have been members for 10 years, and he said, I've never seen them in the gym.
Yeah, and so what that typically will do is trigger a bunch of churn, right? Like, So if you have customers that haven't used your service in 2 years and you call them up and say, oh, hey, let me tell you about all the new features and benefits we've added, most of them will go, well, thank you very much for the phone call. And while you're on the phone, can you cancel my membership?
Yeah.
So, but if you call them up in the first 30 days and you say, thank you so much for subscribing, and let me tell you all about all the great things you can do with this membership. Let me get you started off, to use your gym membership as an analogy. Let me get you started off with a gym routine. Let's get you seeing a trainer. Let's get you a 30-day plan in place. Let's get you a nutrition plan. Let's get you signed up for our website. Suddenly you're changing their behavior. They're adopting, and then you get a sticky customer. But just calling people 2 years after they subscribed, asking them to use it, is gonna trigger churn.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. I really like those suggestions of, you know, that first 90 days of doing everything you can to embed the behavior that is going to give them the most value out of the service. All right. So in terms of you personally, is there something you worry about in your business currently? Just sort of learning a little bit more about you as a business person.
What do we worry about? we're a relatively young business. We just started in 2012, and so I'm always walking that tightrope and never sure how much training to give our staff versus letting people kind of run their side of the business with a degree of autonomy. I mean, as we scale and grow, we need to get more structured, more systems in place. But I don't want to over-systematize in the earliest days of our business. So I'm always, you know, some days I think, God, I really need to document our systems and get everybody, you know, focused in on very rigid sort of, you know, employment plans and review processes and training modules and all the crap that you know is, as an entrepreneur, important to do. At the same time, you know, I just don't want to waste a lot of time in these early days. I mean, I've done this 5 times now. This is my 5th business, and I think I know enough to know that in the first couple of years, I mean, what you're doing in 2 years will probably change dramatically, 5 or 7 years from now. So I don't want to spend a lot of time documenting stuff that I know is going to change. At the same time, I want to be able to scale, and to scale, people need process, they need, you know, systems. And so it's always, you know, finding that right balance between documenting enough and not over, complicating our business.
That's right. Yeah, and it kind of reminded me of what you were talking about earlier in terms of that first 3 months being critical to onboarding your client, and it's about changing behavior in some way. So I see an element of that there as well. You know, getting processes in place and having employees adopt processes, but there's that behavior that you need to kind of get right at the beginning.
Right, like let's all have a committee meeting. Let's discuss the new PowerPoint template we're going to use, what font we're going to use, and how images should be portrayed, and whether we're going to have annotations and animations and speed or fly away or fade in. I mean, all this crap is really important, and companies like Apple do a great job of making everything look really standard and really consistent and really sharp. And I'm a total believer in brand, you know, continuity. Having said that, you can waste a truckload of time in the early days making things look all consistent and perfect when, lots is going to change between now and, say, 2018, 2019. So that's, you want to know what I worry about? It's that.
Yeah. Okay. I noted, often ask my guests how they keep balance and what they do in their spare time. Now, I noticed you're an avid sports person. You've run 5 marathons, according to this. Now, it might be more by now. Ironman triathlon, and one that's dear to me because I'm a keen cyclist, the L'Etape du Tour bike race. So, yeah, obviously.
Cadel Evans, my favorite bike rider of all time, Aussie boy.
Yeah, I've actually ridden with him.
Have you really? I'm guessing your ass.
Because he lives in when he's in Australia, he lives actually very near where I am and rides similar areas.
Well, there you go. He must be a very tough guy to ride against.
Yeah. I haven't raced against him. These were just social rides. He's actually a very down-to-earth guy and very friendly, so he's very giving when he's out in the group. Yeah.
That's great.
So, but yeah, but about you. So you're obviously a keen endurance athlete by the sound of it.
Yeah, yeah, I enjoy all of the above: triathlon, road riding, running. Yeah, those are keen passions for me for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Do you find that it helps your business? Like you go out on these long runs or rides and clears your mind and you start to get new ideas?
Not Ironman training. Ironman training is the biggest time hog you could ever imagine. And so that would, that does suck lots of time. But I find, you know, for sure a short workout, I'm a big, you know, I'll do, you know, like 35, 40 minute run first thing in the morning. And that to me is the right amount of time to, get the get the energy that a run gives me without training for 3 or 4 hours to for something that just becomes a time suck. So right now I'm in kind of startup mode with this business. It's taking a lot of time, so I don't do kind of any hardcore long term training right now. I may get back into that at some point, but right now it's short runs that clear my head.
Hmm. Yeah, that's good. All right, so. Let's move on then to our innovation round, which I call the Buzz, which are a series of 5 questions designed to help our audience learn more about, some tips from your experience about what you see as important in these areas. So hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers and it'll inspire everyone to do something to make them awesome, change their behavior perhaps. So the first one, what's the number one thing anyone needs to do, you think, to be more innovative?
Sell less to more people. One of the things that I think people make the mistake of, and entrepreneurs make the mistake of, is they sell way too many things to too few customers. Hmm. And I think to be more innovative, what you really need to do is try to find one thing that you're going to be the best in the world in. And focus in on selling that to lots of customers. Innovation, I think, it's iterative. And I think, when you look at tremendous products, whether it's the iMac or, I'm trying to think of other good examples, the Apple Watch, et cetera.
Yeah.
It's really just small improvements on an existing product. And I think that's really innovation. But the only way you do that is if you're selling a fewer things and you're really focused in on getting it right with just a couple of things.
Yeah, that's right. That's great advice. And it's often counterintuitive to what most businesses do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
I go around asking what would make this better, and at my, I'm trying to teach my kids about entrepreneurship right now, and I've tried to distill it down to them, to this idea of just kind of going through life saying what would make the situation better. So whether you're waiting in line at a fast food restaurant, or whether you're driving in the car, or typing an email, just keep asking yourself what would make this situation better. And I think that's where innovation comes from, is just always being curious about making a slight improvement on whatever, wherever you are. I think that's when you start to see ideas start to come to life.
Hmm. That's a really powerful question, isn't it? And it can apply to situations, it can apply to products, it can apply to a whole range of things, can't it?
It can.
Mm. All right. And I guess you've sort of answered this question, but do you have a favorite tool or system for helping you be more innovative?
Evernote. So I use Evernote. I've got it installed on my iPad, my iPhone, both my computers. It's everywhere. It's all synced up. So whenever I have an idea, I tag it with a tag, and if I want to continue riffing on the idea, I'll grab my phone. If I happen to have my iPad sitting around reading a book and I think of an idea, I can find the same note and add to it. So it's a tremendous, idea, sort of distilling and curating software.
Yeah, yeah, I love Evernote. It's essentially an electronic notebook, but it allows you to do so much more, like you say, tagging and revisiting things, finding things, and so on. It's great. What do you see as the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Well, I don't like clients, so I can't tell you about a client because I'm a huge believer in not having clients instead of creating recurring revenue. Yeah. So you don't have
that's right. Yeah, so you talk about customers, right?
Well, yeah, customers and also having sort of systems that recur. So I think, you know, not to be too self-serving, but creating a subscription model where a customer agrees up front to a set of services in advance is the best way to keep them on track. You're stripping out any ambiguity to the relationship, and you're saying, look, we're going to do these three things, and in return, you're going to give us this every month. And it's a very clear set of deliverables in return for an amount of money. And I think that forces you, when you publish that and you commit to that, then you'll stay on track, they'll stay on track. And I think that's, you know, that's the best way to do it.
Mm, yeah, well, that's not surprising that's the advice, but it's good advice. Okay, so what's the number one thing people can do to differentiate themselves as an innovator or as a leader in their field?
Well, to me, differentiation comes down to, you know, two attributes. Does it make you different? And do customers care? And those two bars, although simple to say, often can be very difficult to climb over. So number one, do customers care? Is how you're differentiating yourself, is that something customers care about? Like, just because you're the only one-legged web designer from Tahiti, that's interesting, that makes you different, but nobody cares about that. Whereas there's lots of things that you could differentiate yourself on that people don't care about. So what you've got to do is find something that people care about, but at the same time, it still makes you different. So for example, a plumber, if you Google plumber Wollongong or plumber Melbourne, you'll find there's 50 of them that show up, or 500 of them, and most of them will say reliable in their their text in Google. So that's important to customers who hire plumbers. But it's also not differentiating. So you've got to find something that both makes you different, as well as something that customers care about. And that's really finding something that meets those two criteria is tricky.
Yeah, that's great advice. So focusing on what customers care about. Yeah. All right. So what's the future for the Value Builder system and your company?
Well, we want to create 1 million sellable businesses over the next 35 years. So that's our kind of BHAG, to use a Jim Collins term.
Yeah, yeah.
So, our definition for sellable is a company that scores at least 80 out of a possible 100 on the Value Builder score. So that's our kind of mission. And again, we typical average scoring business using our tool, we've had 17,000 users now, is 59.5 out of a possible 100. Mm-hmm. So our definition is getting a million small businesses up over 80 worldwide. We've got a number of partners across Australia. We've got a number in Victoria, the state of Victoria, and obviously a bunch in New South Wales and Western Australia as well. So folks can find an advisor at valuebuildersystem.com.
That's great. We'll post links to all of the resources that John mentions underneath the blog post. So what about you, John? Is there another book in the works?
Not right now. I mean, The Automatic Customer is brand new.
Yeah.
Just released it in February. And that was a slog. You know, it's a heavy research book and it's time consuming. So yeah, no, I'm done writing for a while. I might just ride this one for a few years and think about something else in 3 or 4 years. I'm pretty focused on the Value Builder system as well. So no time for another one for me right now. But I'm certainly proud of it's funny, writing a book is interesting. It's it becomes an indelible mark. You know, you can always wipe away a web page. You can change copy in an email brochure. But once you write a book, it's a permanent thing, right? Like your kids can probably find it in some library in 20 years.
That's
so
right, yeah.
It's something you want to get right. So anyways, I do my best on the books that I've written, and I know it's a big challenge to write another one. So not right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've set a high bar with The Automatic Customer, the newest one, and getting up to that bar, I imagine, will be a fair amount of work again. So
thanks, Jürgen.
That's a good segue into our competition, because I'm going to give away a copy of John's book, The Automatic Customer, and we've talked quite a bit about it, and it is a very good read, very easy read. There's lots of good advice in that book about building a subscription business and the keys to succeeding with that, and why you should be doing that. So, John, what would we like our listeners to do to go into the draw for that competition?
Yeah, I'd love to have a comment in the post for this this podcast with what your biggest challenge is adopting a recurring revenue model for your business. So what are the biggest challenges that you face in adopting an annuity-type recurring revenue billing process in your company today?
Okay, that's great. That's very clear. So leave your comments under this blog post and tell John what your biggest challenges are in adopting this subscription model in your own business. And I'll get John to come by in a couple of weeks' time and award that prize. And hopefully it will help overcome those challenges. All right, so finally, John, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner that wants to be a leader in their field? And I think we know the answer to this a little bit already.
Create some recurring revenue.
Yeah. All right, so before we leave, who else would you like to see me interview on the InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
Oh, Bo Burlingham would be great. Bo is the author of Finish Big, and he wrote a tremendous book about how to exit a company on top. So Bo is a mentor of mine, good friend, and certainly encourage you to reach out to Bo.
Okay, that sounds good. So Bo, keep an eye on your inbox. We'll come get you for the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of John Warrilow. So John, thanks so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. I've learned a lot. I love both your books, but particularly the Automatic Customer, which is I've just reread actually this last month, and it really has a lot of good lessons. So I wish you all the best for the future, particularly as you move forward with your big vision at the Value Builder System of getting a million businesses to a sellable thing over 35 years, and I'll be watching carefully and see how you go.
Thanks, Jurgen. Pleasure to be with you.
Thanks, John.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with John. It gave fascinating insights into his ideas of the value of a business, recurring revenue subscription models, and what is important to success with that business model. The links in the show notes for this episode will be at innovabiz.com.au/John Warrilow. That is JohnWarrillow. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.com.au, John Warrilow, with two R's, two L's, and a W at the front and back of his surname. That will have all the links and everything we spoke about in the episode there for you to refer to and to link to. Remember to leave your comments underneath the video for your chance to win a copy of The Automatic Customer by John. Leave your comments and tell John what is your biggest challenge in adopting this subscription model in your own business. And I'll get John to come back in a couple of weeks and award that prize. Now, John suggested I interview Bo Burlingham, who is the author of Finish Big, How Great Entrepreneurs Exit Their Companies on Top. So, Bo, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from me for the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of John Warrilow. I hope you're enjoying the InnovaBuzz podcast as much as I am making it. Head on over to iTunes or Stitcher to subscribe so you'll never miss a future episode. And while you're there, if you're so inclined, rate the podcast and leave us a review. Until next time, I'm Jurgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, if you don't innovate, you stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and keep innovating.